Welcome to the latest episode of the Keeping Pace podcast. I'm your host, Mike Moreau. Rogers Park native Neelay Gandhi is my latest guest. Our conversation ranges from our love of the Chicago music scene to Neelay working on quitting smoking and becoming a runner. It's a conversation that I think runners will resonate with. Enjoy getting to know Neelay Gandhi.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Hey, Mike. I am Neelay Gandhi, based in Chicago, Illinois, Rogers Park. 60626. Still got the 312 vibes. Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't think Rogers Park is a part of the Chicagoland area.
Get out of here. No, my family's been here since the 80s, man. Like, what's more? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's Chicago, but Rogers Park is definitely Chicago.
I know. I love this neighborhood. And people are like, will you ever leave? I'm like, I don't know. I like it here.
If you don't think Rogers Park is Chicago, then you're racist.
People just think that because it's so far. Like, they think it's really far away from things. I'm like, that's not entirely true.
Well, that suggests that you are making, to say that it's far away from something means you have to say that there's something that we're away from. Right. And if you think that's downtown, then you've got it a little twisted. If you say it's Pilsen, that's a different story. But like, if your definition of Chicago is downtown Chicago, and then you say Rogers Park is far from that, you're not thinking about the city the right way. That's what I would say.
I think that's true. I love giving people alternate suggestions of like when they come into the town of like what they should do, and never involves being downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're trying that. I've got some folks from work coming in at the end of the month, and they always hang out in the West Loop, which is great when you're on an expense tab and stuff. But there's so much more to the city. So anyway, yeah. All right. So Neelay Gandhi there. That was what you asked me. So that's how you say it.
Well, you did, you know, one of my first questions was going to be, you know, a little introduction on yourself, and you briefly talked about it. So you've been in the area for a pretty long time.
Oh yeah. I mean, so like in terms of where I'm from, I was born here. So yeah, my parents moved from India to Chicago in 79. And I was born a little bit after that. So like, we started off in Albany Park. And then I think when I was in around second grade, we moved to Rogers Park. And then like, you know, went to college, got married, came back to Chicago, and did what people do in their 20s, right? Like, moved all around Chicago and lived in all the places that you live in when you're in Chicago, Lincoln Park and Lakeview and Ravenswood and all of that. But then we ended up back here, like not as a, like not intentionally, not as in like, let's be back in Rogers Park, but like it made sense. And so, yeah, so now we're back here and it's awesome. It's amazing to see like how the neighborhood's grown since like the, I don't know, since the time like No Doubt was popular to now.
that was a nice subtle 90s reference.
That's what I was doing last time I lived over here, was listening to No Doubt, going to Rockstock, and hanging out at the Metro.
The Metro. I've been going there since high school. That's one of my favorite places.
Same. Well, assuming that we're around the same age, we have probably crossed paths. I went to almost every New Music Tuesday that I could go to, which I don't even know if they do anymore, but it was $5, three bands, all ages, which as a 15-year-old was like a dream come true. So I'd ride my bike down there and go to the concert. I mean, it was incredible. Get old people to buy me smokes. It was great.
I can't remember my first concert there, but it was, I used to, do you remember Metro Mix?
Metro Mix? I don't know what that is. No.
It was like this website where you could like look up things to do in the city on the weekend. It's basically what Do312 is now.
Yeah.
And I just look at the band's name. I'd be like, oh, that band name sounds cool. It's $5. I'm going to show up.
Yeah. We didn't care who we were seeing. What was your first concert? Do you remember your first concert period?
My first concert was Blink-182 with Bad Religion and Phoenix TX.
That's pretty good, man. Yeah. That's not bad. That's not bad, because that's when Blink-182 was pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you remember your first concert?
Yeah, it was Silverchair with Local H at the Aragon. Oh, well, it was either the Aragon or the Rib. I don't know how old I was. It was whatever age Silverchair would have been touring, Q101 concert. I got dropped off there. Never seen a world like this before. My dad dropped me off outside and I went inside. And as you know, it's just this big open space full of all kinds of things. And I had never, Local H became one of my favorite bands growing up. I saw them 30, 40 times. But I had never heard of them. I was there for Silverchair and I walked in and I got there early. And I remember there were just like all these kids sitting by the sound booth and they're all wearing these green Local H shirts and just sitting there. And I was like, what is Local H and who are these weird kids? They came on and I was like, whoa. And so I've been listening to them ever since. So that was actually kind of like a really significant, and I don't think I ever listened to Silverchair again. So I think that was like a big moment in my life. Because then Local H, like, I mean, what a great band to like if you're in Chicago, because at that time they were playing like basically every month somewhere in Chicago, so you could always go see them. It was cool, man. It's a nice side of being old. It was like, yeah. growing up at that time was a good time for music. I know
the music scene growing up was pretty wild. I loved the punk rock scene here. I feel like I was going to shows like two or three times a week with the same bands playing for each other. It was awesome.
Yeah. I didn't know much about punk rock. I like when I was growing up, I was really into West Coast rap, which I kind of regret now because I kind of like missed the boat on Biggie, who's become like one of my favorite artists of all time. But back then that's what I was into in grade school. And then it's a lot of West Coast hip hop. And then I got exposed I think if you were a teenager at that time, you just like had to like alternative music no matter who you were, because it's like all that was ever playing. And then like just riding around in the car with my friends, just got listening to a lot of classic rock and stuff like that. So never listened much to punk, but you know, that was the other thing about those Metro shows. Like you never knew who was going to show up. So there were plenty of shows where I was like, okay, I guess I'm listening to ska now. Like, you know, it was just like things would happen. Yeah, it was cool.
that was a nice little introduction.
But, that's the intro. That's how I'm going to be identified.
No.
Meandering kid.
We're both
going around Chicago.
It's clear we're both local Chicagoans who love the music scene. But I'm also curious, you know, about your running background. I want to know how you got into running, because you know, for the people who don't know, Neela and I met through a friend of ours in Sacramento while we were doing CIM, and you know, pretty much hit it off there. And yeah. I was like, I gotta get him on at some point.
Yeah, dude. So running, wow. That's complicated, right? Like, so, I guess like the simplest way that I can put it is like I got into it by quitting smoking, if that makes any sense. So I haven't been running for probably as long as a lot of people, you know. I've been running for about 10 years. So like real late bloomer. So basically like around the time I turned 30. And the bad side to that story is that I started smoking when I was 15. And I don't know if you've ever done that. I don't recommend it. But once you start doing that, it's a very difficult thing to break. And, you know, tried for years to break it and just couldn't. And you come up with all kinds of justifications and reasons as to why not. And then like kind of like as that decade closed, you know, it's one of those things where you you know, some people may relate to this. I think I'm the type of person that is going to be addicted to stuff. So my job is not to fight that, but it's to find like the right things to be addicted to. And so it wasn't until running, which made a lot of sense to me, that I found that kind of replacement thing, you know? And I will say too, like it's running. So like starting running and quitting smoking are kind of, for me, almost like identical endeavors, in that they're both kind of the most incalculable thing I could have ever imagined in my life. Like, I was as addicted to smoking as I was averse to exercise. And, you know, I think like, so I've given this a lot of thought over the past 10 years, like kind of trying to figure out, cause it's like a bit of a strange transition, you know? But a lot of it became about, ownership and identity. You know, I don't think I had ever really had, you know, it's like you go to college and then I started working right after college and you get into the grind. And like, I kind of never had a moment to establish an actual like identity, you know, like I was just kind of living off of whatever I had been. So this was a thing. It was like it was an opportunity. And I don't know. I mean, I remember very distinctly my wife was she was my girlfriend at the time. She was exercising a lot. She was going to Export Fitness and she was trying to like get me into working out. And I remember I came in once and like snuffed out my cigarette outside the gym and came in and like, I was very shy and embarrassed. I didn't want to change. So like, I was just wearing my jeans and stuff. And I got on like an elliptical and I did it for like 2 minutes and it was just like exhausted me and I hated it. And I was embarrassed and I left. And like, that was one of those moments where like, even though I didn't immediately start running after that, it was one of those things where I was like, that's not me. Like, I didn't know that that's how I would react. And I was like, that's not me, like to give up that easily on something. So something that simple kind of seeded like the whole thing, where then I was like, okay, like, let's explore this, you know, let's see what this is like. And it was super hard to get going. But you know, there's always like, kind of like with smoking, there was always like even the most minimal bit of reward, you know, even if it wasn't like a significant reward, it was always like, I did that. I got it. It didn't feel great, but I got something out of it. I just kept building on that. So yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've ever really explained that before, but.
So with running, you know, it is like you said, you said you kind of always feel like, you know, you're going to be the person who is like addicted to something. Yeah. How is that been for you with running? Like, you know, cause running is a kind of a sport where rest days are essential for growth. So that can be hard for, I feel like that could be hard for someone who might be, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wish, you should have told me that last year. Like I ran through the entire lockdown pandemic thing. So I don't know what the final count was, but it was like close to 600 days of consecutive running. It put me in the worst running shape that I've been in 10 years. And it also really put me in a rut. So you're right that like, there is this kind of, like you can do this wrong, you know? But that's part of it, you know, like I don't think you can sort of say like what exactly you should get out of it. You know, like it's like I can try to kind of map out goals and things like that that I might have for the year. But there are kind of external conditions that like your running, I think, sits within. Right. And that might be family. That might be work. That might be some kind of crisis. Or it might just be that you're on like a great streak and trying to improve your time and break 3 hours in the marathon, which is where I was at a couple of years ago, you know, like it could be any of those things, but you don't necessarily know like what pocket you're going to fall in. Right. So like, I think on some level, you know, with the addiction thing, like sometimes an addiction can be a comfort. And even if you're aware of that, like even if you're aware that you're not necessarily owning this relationship with running, that maybe you're kind of being owned by it, you know, for me, that at least provided like a lot of comfort over a really challenging couple of years where I felt like, hey, I know this isn't going great. I know I'm gaining weight. I know I'm falling out of shape because I'm not taking care of my body. I'm not able to do the workouts that I want to do because I'm not putting the rest in so I can go do the hard work, right? All of that, like all that stuff that we know as runners, I knew that that was happening, but I was getting the comfort the same way that you get the comfort out of any other addiction of like, I know this isn't the best thing for me, but it's what I need right now to be happy. And I think you know, I've never thought about that either, Mike. You're asking the big questions. I think, but like that's valuable too. You know, that's valuable too. Like, sure, the rest and things like that will help you ultimately perform better, right? And I've always found that. I've always found that a disciplined running program, no matter what I think about it, always helps me excel from a performance standpoint. But performance isn't always the consideration. Like, honestly, last couple of years were about survival and mental health, and being there and being present and having ownership of my life. And this gave me a way to have that ownership, even if I knew that I was jacking up my fitness.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's tough, but like you said, you just kind of have to learn it. And I think some of the things, like I don't know if you know this, but I coach like high school cross country. Mm-hmm. And some of the things I tell the kids, I'm like, it's okay to like take a risk and fail, like, because that's the only way you're going to learn. And it seems like, you know, you pushing it a little bit more, you're like, okay, like I've kind of reached the limit. I've kind of like got to back off a little bit.
Yeah, that's a huge, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a huge part of it. And like, not to make this about like time goals and things like that, because I don't think like that's not really what I intended to talk about in this conversation, because everyone's got different goals. And I don't think like sort of like your pace and things like that are what's important. But that said, like within the context of the work that, you know, you do for yourself, it is fair to like establish certain goals. And so to your point, you know, I remember how hard I worked to break 130 in the half marathon. That was a huge accomplishment for me to do that. I only did it twice, I think. But the first three times I tried, I failed. And it wasn't even like I'm getting closer. It was like I realized I made some kind of strategic mistake during the run, right? And whether that's from a nutrition standpoint, or like when I stepped on the gas, or like whatever it was, right? That's huge. Like, you're right. Like, those failures were huge, hugely important to what I was trying to achieve. And now, like, I'm no longer in 130 shape, but I still, those lessons are still valuable to kind of anything that I'm working on, right? Like, I have such an understanding now. And like, when I mess up in a race, or when I mess up in a workout, it's easier now for me to say, well, yeah, stupid, you didn't eat breakfast today. Or you're not hydrated, or you didn't sleep, or you drank too much last night. Or, you know, it's become much easier for me to identify those problems. Whereas like, I think sometimes as if you're like a younger runner, you may just think like, oh, well, I guess I just can't do it. Or like, I'm not fit. Or like, this isn't for me. You know, like those sorts of ideas. You start to recognize that there is actually like a cause and effect, right? And that's like, that's to me, that's really powerful. And that's like, that's what I get out of the failures. That's why I'm never like truly disappointed in an effort because of that, because you do have those learnings and it somehow it sort of arms you in the future. Like, you just get more arrows in your quiver, right? So now the next time something gets jacked up, you sort of know why. Yeah, that's my thought. I mean, Chicago Marathon is a good example of this. Like the last Chicago Marathon was a really rough race, I think, for a lot of people. And you could get down on yourself for how you perform. You know, I was down on myself for a little bit, but then you recognize, like, I've been here before. I know what happened. I know what happened with the humidity. I know what happened with my nutrition, like all of that, you know. Maybe I shouldn't have taken those days off in the middle of summer either, when it got really hot and I didn't want to go out and do the work. Maybe I should have done the work. Not that that would have made a huge difference. That was a shitty day, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to go back to the early days of your running, like what were those early days like for you? What kept you going? Because it's those, hard. Yeah. Running is hard.
Those were awesome days. Those were awesome days because they were just full purely of discovery. Like, I had no context, no idea that there were all these different levels of paces and all these distances and things like that. The idea was like, get out and run and see when you pass out. And And, you know, you do that a couple times and you go, okay, that's not a good way to do it. And you start to slow down and you start to learn your body. So that's what those days were like. Those days were me, you know, By the way, Mike, I hope you like an extremely long answer to the most simple questions, because that's what you're going to get. But I will say though, like I talked earlier about kind of like identity and like shaping identity. And I was definitely like at a crossroads when I started running, where I grew up a skinny kid. I wasn't the athletic kid, but I was always the skinny kid. Like, no, you know, like, in fact, to the point where like, I was sort of like made fun of about that. And then your 20s happen and all of a sudden you're not the skinny kid anymore. You're exactly what a 28-year-old man looks like, which in general is not great. If he hasn't worked out for 12 years or something, right? That gave me this opportunity to, like, instead of ignoring that and dismissing that and just being like, oh, I'm getting older or whatever, I started to understand my body. And I started to understand that I could influence the way I feel, the way I look, which that sounds simple, but I don't think I knew that until I started running. Like, I think I thought there was a bit of fatalism to this whole thing, that you get older and things happen and you look, get a certain way. And I don't know what happens after that. You know, and I think like starting to engage in this way was the first time probably in my life that I was now starting to come in touch with myself, like physically. That's what those early days were like, starting to understand weird things. Like, I mean, if you ask a random person on the street, like, to comment on their breathing technique, I doubt they've ever thought about that, right? But now I'm thinking about like 1-2 breath, like things like that. So that's what those days were like, totally detached from goals, totally detached from mileage or anything like that. And just like, this is how I feel sometimes. Like, that was, I think that was cool and very motivated. And then like, what's the impact of that? Like, the fact that, hey, maybe I didn't know that I was so sleep deprived, but I think I do need more sleep. And I don't think I'm eating well. I thought I ate well, but I guess I'm not eating well. Things like that. Like, I can't go to Wendy's anymore. Like, you know, like stuff like that, I thought was, that's what I got out of those days. And then like from that, I like started to map a course, you know, because like, as you know, all of a sudden you have one or two little wins, right? You get a little bit faster or you run a little bit farther or something like that. And then the natural question is, well, can I go farther? Can I go faster? What happens if I try? And that, it was all discovery. Like, I didn't have any books. I didn't have any friends who ran. My wife was the only person I knew who was athletic. So it was just like, do what your body's telling you and try to sort it out. And then it was later, you know, that like started getting in this community and the books and everything. But for the first few couple of years, I was by myself. I was like the weirdo who just like goes running for some reason, you know?
So that's like a really, honestly, I think that's a really cool way to like to describe an intro to running. I never thought about it that way. It's just like, hey, like, you know, as you get more into it, you're like, there's always more time to learn, but especially early on, it is a really interesting learning period, because you're just getting into something that you never were into.
Yeah. And I think how many times in your life are you able to do that and just do it so purely, right? Because like, think about all the stuff you do in school. Like, let's say you're in school and you get into music, right? And like, you're in band and you know what, but now you want to be the drum lead or like, you know, or like I did a lot of creative writing in school. And it wasn't enough for me to be that. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to get published. I wanted to do all this stuff, right? Like, every time you embark on something, there is always like this kind of methodology and goal that you have attached to it. And it generally has something to do with progress and being the best or something like that. It's rare that you're able to like enter something that you can just kind of purely explore on your own terms, you know? And frankly, I think it just comes from ignorance. Like, it's like when you're able to like come into a world that you just don't even understand, then you find your way, right? Because who can tell you? Because no one wants to tell me, because they're like, he doesn't know what he's doing. So like, he's not part of this. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to do whatever I do. and we'll see what happens. Yeah. And hopefully I don't get hurt or, you know, burnt out. So anyway, yeah, it was, I'm glad you asked that, because I've thought about like how I entered it. And I've always thought about it from that context of like overcoming smoking and that whole thing. I never really thought about it from that lens of like, I think there was probably something inside of me that was just craving like a release from all the other, like the whole system of doing things, right? Like everything that I wanted to embark on, I loved. And then all of a sudden it was a rat race. It was something that I had to get in and be the best. And, you know, it's like how we're raised. And this was the one thing where everybody was like, nobody understands what Neela's doing and why he's doing it. And so we're not going to say anything to him. And then I happened to, you know, and then I feel like I figured it out over the coming years. I feel like I figured it out, and I found what it means to me. And I think I'm able to help others with running now too, like through like pacing and things like that. So, yeah, man, it's a great world. It's a great world. I think it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. Like it just takes that, like, don't, you know, folks shouldn't worry about really anything. They should just kind of like have some personal conviction around this and then go do it on your own terms. And then if something comes of that, that's great. And if nothing comes of it, at least you got some like sort of identity, you know, out of it, some sort of positivity out of it.
All right. So you go from, you know, discovering running, learning a little bit more about yourself. When did the like goals and like races part come into play?
So I signed up for like a couple races pretty early on, like, you know, so probably like a year or so into running, there were like a few local races. Like there was an 8K that I remember running like somewhere around Montrose Beach, somewhere, I think it was like the Pause 8K, something like that. I think it was my first race. But the kind of the moment was signing up for the Chicago Marathon lottery, which I think was probably 2014. Like late 2013 or early 2014, I think it was for the 14 race, where never had run distance. I mean, the 8K was the furthest that I had run, and like on a regular basis, I was trying to run 5 miles, like on a semi regular basis. But I was like, I saw the thing I pop up like on Twitter or somewhere, right? And I was like, okay, well, I'll just put my name in the hat. And the only commitment that I made was like, if I get selected, I'm going to work on it. And if I don't, who cares? Like moving on. Right. And I did. Right. So my ticket hits. And then I was like, you know, I had a moment of like, oh no. And then like immediately registered with Kara, one of the local running groups, and got onto their program. I think we were living in Ravenswood at the time. So it was like 2 mile or so walk to where they did their Sunday long runs. And I got training with them. And like that got the fire in me. Cause that was the first time that I had seen that there was like a community and a program. You know, I mean, like I had done a few races. I had done like 3 or 4 races. So I knew that you could go to a race and other runners, right? But I didn't know that there was like this world where people would support you and say you're doing a good job and whatever, right? People were asking me about my shoes. I remember I got the Clifton ones when they came out. So it was whenever that was. Because I remember getting a lot of questions about those shoes, because the Hoka Clifton ones were like a new thing because they were so squishy and weird and light and all that. And that was cool to me. I was like, wow. And running along the lakefront path, which if people don't know, the lakefront path in Chicago is one of the most beautiful things that you could ever run along. But then also just like that, there's so many people there working on things that you're working on. And the fact, and there were water stops and Gatorade, and it was just like an entire network of people who were like, we're going to help you figure out how to do this. Right. And I was like, this is dope. And after that, I was in love with racing. I was just like, I didn't know that. You know, I was under the impression that racing was just like, who's the fastest? And if you're not fast, you're suck or something like that. And that's not it at all. I mean, it's there's all these cohorts in the racing community, right? And we're all working together. And of course, we group ourselves in certain ways because it just makes sense from a fitness standpoint to work with people who are kind of like you. But that's what got me going. And then I got it. And then from that, I got a thing. I mean, I was running. I was trying to run, you know, 10 to 15 races a year. So there was a race on my calendar every month, including January and February, whether they were 5Ks, not a lot of 10Ks, because oddly enough, in Chicago, there just aren't a lot of 10Ks available, which is kind of weird because I think it's a wonderful distance. It's the kind of one of my favorite distances, but you don't see a lot of them. But there's a million 5Ks. So I was signing up for every 5K I could find. And then I started signing up for half marathons, and I was running several of those a year. And that, I mean, it just got me going, man. It was so awesome. And I wasn't, I didn't have like programs around those races. Like I wasn't training for races at that time. But the act of constantly racing was keeping me fit. So yeah, it was cool. And then it just goes from there. I mean, you know, then certain you hook on to certain things. I mean, after I ran that first Chicago marathon, it was probably a day or two later that I was committed to my next marathon, and you know, just kept going. Did Chicago, did one at the University of Illinois, didn't get into the lottery the next year and went to Portland for what is now a defunct Portland marathon. Then I got into the Chicago sort of system. So I've done that, I don't know, 6-7 times now. Yeah, so we're just grinding. We're going. We're doing them all. There's a race out. There's a race in Kenosha, the Wisconsin Marathon, that for a while I was doing every winter, early season, like right before spring. Not as a competitive race, but that was one to just like, hey, let's get more marathons under the feet, stuff like that. So yeah, man, it becomes a cycle. Like once you get in, you know, once you get, I hope this whole conversation doesn't just make me sound like an addict. Like you can just put anything in front of me and like anything shiny and I just start, you know?
I don't think so. I just think it sounds like you, you know, you really grew to love running. And I think a lot of people can definitely relate to that. So,
there's so much to work on, Mike, you know, I don't mean to cut off your next question, but there's just like, there's always, it's really hard. If this is going to be corny, I stop myself. It's really hard to see the finish line because there is, that's so corny. I know, but there's so much to work on, right? It's like even when I got to a point where like physically I felt good and I was happy with results and things like that, all of a sudden I started to notice this decline in my mental health. And I started to ask myself, like, is there anything I can do from a training perspective to alleviate that? Like, why am I so burnt out? Like, I thought this made me happy. Like, why is this making me so upset? You know? And so over the past year, like, that's actually something that's become a big focus of my training. Like, whatever the times are, is like, how can I get a little bit healthier from that perspective? Right. Not have that dread over like the upcoming workout and, you know, things like that, or like not achieving your goals and like get back to those terms that I was talking about that I was on, that kind of discovery world that I was in 10 years ago. Like part of me is craving that. Anyway, point being, there's just like, even when you are like achieving or exceeding whatever your kind of goals are on paper, there is just running will always surface a problem for you. is what I find, right? No matter what you achieve and how happy you look and all of that, you know, it's there. If there's anything wrong, you'll find it when you're running. And I think that's a positive. I think that's a way to say like, hey, you're finding a way to be honest with yourself, trusting yourself, listening to yourself. You know, I think that's a very healthy thing, even if it kind of, you know, can make you upset sometimes.
I also think just the past, you know, 2.5+ years, they were just hard when no one knew what was going on. Like that, you know, that affects everything. And I think, you know, there are lingering effects to that. So honestly, I think that's still it for some people. They're just like, you know, this is hard. Like I, you know, the last 2 years were hard. Like how, you know, why isn't this being fixed? You know, like I thought once things quote unquote got better, that it would be, you know, a lot easier again. But I think people are figuring out that's, you know, not the case.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Mike. I mean, it is like, I have, you know, it's like, you hear me like wax poetically on all these random topics. At the same time, like this kind of very simple fundamental issue that you're describing of just like this general like anxiety, I haven't personally been able to figure it out. Is like, what, like when it, like, when am I allowed to come out of this, right? Whatever this is. And, you know, the pandemic has affected people in so many different ways. I mean, there's actually, not to be so grim, but it's actually brought a lot of positivity to my life because it changed my working model. And as a result, it brought me much closer to my family than I was before. So like, I benefited a lot from it, but you still can't shake this kind of just like ethos, right? Of like what, like just there's something in the air, right? That isn't right. And we know there's something that's not right. And we won't get into politics and stuff necessarily, but like there's that vibe too, right? There's just something's been off, man. Like, and so I don't know if I'm, you know, running towards it or away from it. If I'm trying to figure it out or if I'm just trying to hide from it, I don't know, you know, but I don't have to figure all of it out, right? That's your job. This is your show. You figure it out. I provide the input. Yeah.
No, I think that was very interesting what you said. Like, I think you said it better than I did. I was like, there is just like, there's something off because, you know, like a lot of positives did come from it. But like you said, I think people are afraid to, there's just, like you said, there's just something off. Like, and we don't know quite what it is. And we just hope that one day that we can honestly stop talking about COVID, but who knows if that will ever happen. Okay. So I do want to hear like about your first marathon. I want to hear about that experience. Cause I know my experience to me is like pretty comical. So I always love hearing about people's first marathons.
Sure, man. I can't believe you remember your first, I'll say. So I will say I, of all my stories, I'm going to keep this one quick because I want to know what's comical about yours. But what I will say is it was one of like the purest experiences of my life. Like I've run, I mean, you know, I'm a data nerd. So like, I know what all my runs look like and all of that. And you know, so all told, I probably run somewhere around 100 races. And of those 100, the first Chicago Marathon stands out to me as one of my finest performances, you know? And the reason for that is like everything that was supposed to happen happened. It was, so from a time standpoint, right? I was targeting 3:30. I ran somewhere around 3:27, 3:26, I think, something like that, right? By the way, that's the great thing about runners, right? We always approximate, but like we are usually like within 10 seconds of like what we're, it's like, oh, I don't really remember that race. I think it was like 3:26:19. But anyway, so there was that, right? Just from like a goal achievement standpoint, I felt like, wow, this really works. Like, cause there's no way that I like, so, you know, it's not just the first Chicago Marathon, right? So go from October back to February or March, right? Like I went from not capable of running a marathon to, you know, exceeding my goal in a marathon. That felt incredible, right? So just on that level of like achieved what I wanted to achieve. And I'll tell you, I mean, I remember having this feeling, Mike, when I crossed the finish line of like, it works. Like, like if you work on something, you can achieve it. And maybe that's like wild for a 30-year-old to not have known, but I didn't know that. I thought that my life was governed by externalities, right? Your boss decides how well you do in your life. Your parents decide what you do, like all of that. And, you know, like I said, I'm a little bit of a late bloomer, and I don't think I had the maturity to understand that I actually controlled my life. And I'm not trying to make like, I know I'm making like some massive statement about like one race, but that's why that race was so important in my life, was it was the first moment that I can remember as an adult where I understood that I was actually in charge of something. So that was huge. Besides that, pain, so much pain, Mike, like just, I mean, pain, like in ways on bones that I didn't know I had, like, that was frankly, one of my biggest learnings was like, I didn't know that your feet could hurt that way. That was real. right? Because that wasn't just my first marathon. That was my first time running more than 20 miles, period. And as anybody knows, when they're trying that race, right, that last 10K, if you've never done it before, is a world. Like, it's an entire world, right? So that was number two, right, was like pain. And then the last thing, and I talked about this, you know, earlier, community, man. Like, we talked at the start of the call about, like, growing up in Chicago, what Chicago's like. Chicago shows its colors at the Chicago Marathon. And you can think what you want. You can grow up in whatever community you do. And we got a lot of problems in this city, you know, from segregation to crime to any, just any number of sociopolitical issues. Like, Chicago does not get a pass. Like, this place needs a lot of work. But especially as a minority, right? Especially looking like a guy that you might not expect to see crossing that finish line all the time. I felt love. I felt love from this city. I felt love in every neighborhood that I passed through in this city. And, you know, I know they just saw my number on my bib and were cheering me on, and they cheered me on the same way they cheered everybody else on. There was nothing special about me, but it felt mad special. Like, it really did. You know, and I wasn't going to let any kind of skepticism inside of me fight that and say, oh, well, they're all cheering, but they're just all drunk or something. You know, it's no, like, they were out there for me, man. And the last thing I'll say on that is, like, I remember coming out of that race delirious, right? And, like, I drank however many beers I drank afterwards, and walking around downtown, and I had a cop come up to me and congratulate me on running the race because I was still in all my gear. And that was dope. Like, I don't know. So that's the last thing on that, on that first Chicago Marathon, was just like mad love for the city. I never felt that kind of, I mean, it's just incredible. It's like hard to even think about. And I've seen that in every Chicago Marathon I've run since. It's something very special about Chicago in that race. People turn up.
Yeah, and you wanted to hear about my experiences. Like, honestly, a lot of it was just pain. I had no idea what I was doing. Zero. I had honestly no business running a marathon. And I was like, I got to 18. I hit, like, cramps. I was, like, bonking. I walked a lot. I was like, what is happening? And I don't know what. And I'm
surprised to hear that. You're like, I mean, you know, like, in terms of, like, your fitness and something, like, having met you in California, I look up to you a little bit, man. I'm trying to get to where you're at.
It took.
So tell me more about that. You're saying, like, you weren't ready, or what was going on?
I just had no idea. I had no idea how to run a marathon. It goes back to just, you know, like you said, it was just a period of discovery. I didn't know I was going to even like running when I first started. I mean, I did the marathon because I was working at a bar and I saw some older people come in and I was like, oh, I think I can do that. And and I did it. And I actually took a year off after that marathon. I didn't know I would run another one. And then something brought me back. And I was like, I learned from that first one. I was like, OK, that's what I did wrong. Now, like, I can improve, because I didn't know anyone running marathons. I don't really think I knew very many runners at the time. So I was just kind of out here running. I didn't know anything about nutrition or any of that stuff. So I made all of the mistakes that you can make for your first marathon.
Were you a runner? Like, was it the distance that was a challenge, or were you getting into running?
I was a very much so a new runner. I think that was my third race ever, the Chicago Marathon. So it was just me having to learn and just not knowing what was going on.
I think, curious what you think about this, but I think racing is a discipline, right? Like, different from, like, you can talk about the individual races, like marathons, 5Ks, and, like, what goes into those and how that's different. But I think racing in general is a discipline and a practice that has to be learned, because you are activating something inside of you that you don't normally access in my world, right? Like, I'll say, like, I'm pacing I'm pacing a group out of Lincoln Square right now, who's all training for half marathons and marathons. And I have some runners in my group who talk about how, well, this is just how I run, right? Because I was kind of like, on our last long run, I was kind of explaining to them, like, you know, if you're training at 8:39, you know, pace, like there's a wide window of like what you can race at. But I have a lot of runners who say like, no, this is what I'm going to race at. Like they just have, you know, this one thing. Right. And which is great. Like, no shade on that. Like, that's fantastic. Right. But my thing about racing is like, for some reason, I don't know if it's the crowd, the support, probably some combination of all of this, you're able to dig and get something sometimes that you could never get. Right. At least that's my attitude towards race, is like, if we're out here, like, let's do this. Like, let's get silly. Let's take risks, you know, because I'm not competing for an NCAA. I'm not competing for a contract. I'm not trying to place. Right. So let's go.
No, I think
a lot of pain.
You're right. And I still think you're right, because I don't like the marathon. I love the marathon distance. I think it's probably my strongest distance, but I do think that I'm still learning it. I don't think I know all the answers. I don't know if you ever will. I mean, I think it's just something you try and you chip away at, and hopefully on race day, all you can do is honestly hope things go well.
Yeah. It's the most, I think it's the, in my experience, it's the most apathetic distance. Like it does not care about you. The marathon does not care about you at all as a person. I know that's a weird thing to say, but like, it will not help you. Like, there are ways that you can, you know, redline in a 5K and still kind of push through. And like, even though you're going to throw up when you cross the finish line, like you'll be okay, right? You didn't achieve your goal, but you'll be okay. The marathon will destroy you. It will crush you. Like, it will not have any sympathy for your feelings, or I worked so hard all summer and I can't believe it's come to this. And we've all been through that, those of us who have run lots of marathons, you know, and there's no recourse. You can't talk to the manager, you know, there's nothing there.
Yeah. You're
it's
the manager.
It's just like, well, if and when you get to the end, you can have a free Goose Island, and that's the best we can do for you. You know, that's it. So I think to me, that's what's so compelling about this distance, man. It's just like, this kind of, because I was in a cycle where I was doing better I was PRing every marathon, right? So I was getting to this point where now it's like, oh, maybe I'll run 159 one day. Like, it was just like, you do the math and you're like, if I'm improving by 10% every race, then, you know, by 2050, I should be able to run, right? And you're like, you know, and then it hit me, right? And then after that, like, I got into a downturn and a little bit of a rut and all of that. And, you know, it was nice to be humbled in that way. Anyway, it's I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's actually very satisfying for me to hear that you had a bad time in your first marathon, because you're an incredible runner, dude. I really admire your work ethic. You know, I see your runs on Strava. I know who you're friends with. I know how hard your friends work. You know, you put in a heck of an effort. You probably don't want to talk about yourself, but you put in a heck of an effort in CIM. So I got a lot of love for how you approach running. You know, I don't have a ton of friends in the running community. So I sometimes I look to folks like you, you know, so to know that you just weren't always like that is actually very helpful for me.
No. And I, you know, and I hope, and the one thing I tell people who come into the store, you know, I tell them, you know, ask all of the questions, but then also ask more, and then reframe those answers to fit you, because everyone is speaking from their own experience.
I love that.
And so it's really challenging for some people, because, you know, they hear things and they're like, oh, that's going to happen to me. And like, not exactly, because everyone is going to have a different experience. It's just, you know, this is just the way things are.
You know, I had a couple, since you mentioned that, like I had a couple of friends who actually, they became pretty close friends. They're neighbors of mine. And both were college runners. I don't know what division they were, but I mean, whatever, right? They were good college athletes. And they came from that world that frankly, Mike, isn't the world that we're describing. It's not rooting for you and go get your goals and believe in yourself. It's you're not top three, get out of here. Right. Very cutthroat. Cause that is a side of running that, like, even though that's not my experience, it's what probably kept me from entering the sport sooner. Cause I've gotten so much joy out of the sport, but I knew I was never one of them, nor did I want to be. Right. I didn't want to work myself to the bone and be the best. Right. I just want to find something, which again, the marathon, I don't know why. I think frankly, it has a lot to do with marketing, but like the marathon enables that in a way that other races don't. But anyway, yeah. I mean, I remember talking to them and just like, they were reflecting on how just a couple of years ago, frankly, running with somebody like me wouldn't have been something they would have been down with. Because I wasn't moving them towards, right? I mean, these guys are, you know, they're running 4:10, trying to get down to 405 miles. Like that, I'm not doing that, man. Like I'm, you know, on the best day, I'm a 540 miler. So like that's not my world. But that stuff made me think too, though. Is like I do have a lot of running friends who look at me that way, which is weird. Right. But like that, they see me in that light, like of like, how could anybody run faster than 8 minutes a mile, you know, like whatever it might be, or 10 minutes or whatever. That's when I started to just like, be like, you know what, man, this is all just, it's just all relative. Like, it's just, you know, and I find that the people that I connect with are the people who have a love of the sport. I have friends who are, you know, kind of that, like, sort of we have a mutual friend who you could argue is probably this kind of Olympic B standard woman, right? Incredible athlete. And then I have friends who, you know, run, you know, 5-10 miles a week and like to go on jogs, and they take pictures when they run and things like that, and they get a lot out of those. So the whole thing is about just respect and community, you know. I think that's it. Find your lane, find your zone, find your community, find where you're comfortable. Don't let anybody like take that stuff away from you. I think that's what I had to get over, right? That was that apprehension. I mean, that was probably what kept me smoking for 15 years. Was I was like, well, I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't. Nah, man. It's just like, you know, not only can you do it, but you can find a community with people that you think you would not have a community with. And I think like that is such a wonderful thing. I mean, you start to think about concepts of like diversity, that like all of a sudden, like I'm engaging, right? Like this isn't high school. Like I can talk to the jocks, right? Because the jocks can't run marathons. So I can talk to them and I can tell them what's what, you know? I don't know. It's all just very empowering. I imagine like this applies to probably everything, like whatever interest you have in this world, right? It's like the second you open your door to a room that you think you're not supposed to walk in, you find a lot of friends inside, I think, you know?
I think that's a cool way to look at it. And I'm hoping that, you know, I play a little part in kind of bringing people together. Cause like you said, like those D1 athletes, you know, you and I, they're not someone we would run with, but now hopefully they're like rediscovering a love for the sport and they're like, oh yeah, we're just out here to just have a good time. And, you know, we can run all together. And that's what I think the sport in general needs to be better about, is trying to connect people more, because I do think there are a lot of people, like you said, even us, like there are people who look at us and they're like, how can you run that fast? And they're like, right, won't ever run with us. So hopefully we
can. And then there's people who look at us and say, how can you run that slow? They probably don't look at you like that, but sometimes they look at me like that.
It's just like hoping we can make more of a connection.
And it's about to me, it's about recontextualizing that whole conversation, you know. And again, like if there's anything, because you could make a lot of criticisms about the marathon, right? And having marathons that have 30,000 runners and things like that, right? Where like that's one of my cats. You can, you know, like some people are very critical of that. That like should all of these people even be running this race, right? Well, okay. So obviously there's financial implications, which just help our sport to have that many registrants. But on the flip side, I would say for the most part, absolutely they should, right? Because there is just a spectrum of experience and engagement. And it's not on any of us to define where they sit on that spectrum. Because the second that you start to say that, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's just the term that's used, right? The second that you start to look at some of these back of the pack runners and say, well, they don't belong. So one, you X them out and eventually I become the back of the pack runner, right? If you take out enough people. And you know, but the other thing is, well, but isn't the spectrum what actually encourages like the leadership to be where they're at? Right? Like they're relative to everything else, right? So to be in the top 1 or 5% of runners means that there have to be runners who are all the way over here, right? If the only marathoners were people who could run 220 or below, then running 208 is not as impressive, right? But when you start to look at the broader population and realize that actually 5 hours isn't that bad, 4 hours is actually a pretty solid freaking time, right? Like when you start to get into that world, well, now you really start to understand like how incredible the achievement of people like Kipchoge, like Galen Rupp, like Molly Seidel, like all these people, right? Now you're like, wow, like how, right? When you think of Des Linden winning the Boston Marathon in that weather, and you trying to go out to run in the rain on like a October morning when it's like 45 degrees and drizzling, and she was running through like 25 mile an hour icy headwinds. You start to respect, you know, the talent that then. But we got to put in the work so they look good.
All right, we've talked a lot about running and had a good conversation on it. But what are some things you do for fun outside of running?
Well, let's see. Looks like my baby took a break so I can answer that question. Things outside of running that I like to do. That's a hilarious question, Mike, because Danielle, my wife, and I talk a lot about how you kind of just have time to do one thing. So I have so and right now running is that thing, right? So we have two kids. Spending time with the kids is incredible. My son is a Star Wars freak and he's 5. And I've actually learned about Star Wars through him because I didn't grow up interested in Star Wars. So hanging out with the kids, you know, I know that's an old man answer, but that's something. I cook almost every day. So cooking is definitely a major passion of mine. I play a lot of chess as well. A lot of chess. I mean, we're like thousands of games. So like, and I'm okay. You know, I'm kind of the same chess player that I am runner, where it's like I'm better than middle of the pack, but nobody has to worry about me. You know, I'm a decent rated chess player. So yeah, it's stuff like that, man. I like not to be like hipster tattoo guy, but I got really into records a few years ago. We listened to a lot of music. And so like things that aren't running, man, that provide joy are being in the house, hanging out with the kids, listening to music, cooking food, watching them eat that food. Man, I vibe on that. That's kind of all I need, you know. If I didn't have all of that, I would probably spend my time kind of like we were talking about earlier in the 90s. I would probably spend all my time at concerts, just drinking beer and listening to music. I feel like that's such a basic answer, but that's, I don't know. What do you do? What should I do, dude? Like, what should I be doing?
I don't think it has to be more than that. I mean, I consider myself a pretty simple guy. I think I run, I read, I go to concerts. Those are the three things I like doing.
I used to read. I got to get back into reading. I was an English major. Reading's a good thing. I mean, hey, that's great, man. Yeah, but that's it, right? I mean, look, man, like, it's like you talk about like what other things, right? But like, you know this as well as I do. Like, the time commitment for running is massive. You know, I think that's one thing that's often overlooked in our sport. I know you were trying to get away from the topic of running and I brought it back, but it's just like, it's overlooked. Like, like to get decent work in, we're talking about hours at a time, you know, we're talking about hours and hours over the course of a week, right? I like to sit on the couch, you know, like it's just, there's only so many, I have to work, right? It's like what, you know, and also I'm not one of those early risers, right? So I know there's people who like, by the time it's 7 a.m., they've run 10 miles, they've written a PowerPoint deck, they've fed their kids breakfast, you know, and now they're like, let's begin the day. And they have this big cup of coffee. That's not me, man. I sleep until the moment I don't have to sleep. I'm not fitting in like a French lesson at 5:30 in the morning or something like that. Like that's not me.
I'm not an early riser either. Like the other day, like people were getting up to beat, you know, the heat yesterday. And I was like, I'll just take a day off. I don't feel like getting up at 6 a.m.
I got up yesterday. I ran, but I only had time to run about 5K. And also, yeah, to clarify, me getting up is, I mean 7:30. Like, you know, I got up early on Sunday because I think that's the only thing. And that's why, like, I attached myself. It'd be interesting. I'm interested to hear from you as a coach, right? Because, like, for me, like, these pacing programs, like, beyond just, like, because I really just get like an incredible joy out of like working with people and stuff like this. But those people are crazy. I mean, they're like, this run starts at 6 a.m. So it's like, okay, I guess I will somehow get to Lincoln Square by 6 a.m. Right. And when I have this like external commitment, it happens, right? Because I will never if you need me to pace you, and you're waiting for me, I am going to be there. Like, you know, come hell or high water, I will be there. But if it's like a, hey, Nile, we're all trying to run tomorrow. We're thinking we're going to run at 6:30. I'm probably going to message you. I'm going to wake up at like 6:15 and be like, dude, like, I'm sick. I can't make it or something. Like, yeah, oh, my kid is blah, 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 blah. And you're just like, all right, whatever, right? Like, it's really hard for me, man. And I'm trying, but it's a give and take. Because, you know, you asked about like what else I do. The reality is that like if I decide to do more, right, like if I take on additional hobbies and things like that, right, that's my evening, which means that then I'm more tired. My day is longer, which means I can't do any of the early morning stuff. So I don't know. I work with a lot of people that I admire who are like amazing. I just can't believe how much stuff they get done in the day. But it's just not me, and that's okay. That's okay.
It happens. We all find ways to get it done, and it's just like with running. You know, we shouldn't really compare because everyone just has to find a way to get it done somehow.
I think rest is you called me out on this earlier in this call, and I think you were right too. You know, like we don't talk enough about rest. Like, I mean, forget about running. I kind of just mean in general with our lives, right? We're trying to like, we want to achieve so much. And there's almost like this like doomsday mentality to it of like, if I don't do it, it's never going to happen and all of it, right? Man, that's not true. Like no one's going to look at you for what you didn't achieve. They're going to look at you for what you did achieve. And like, I feel like, maybe this is just me. I shouldn't put this on everybody, you know, but like for me, you know, this idea of like, you didn't do well enough, you should have done more, whatever. I'm finding as I get to meet more adults, right? I'm finding that, like, that's my problem because nobody's looking at me that way and I'm not looking at anybody that way. I look at people for their successes. I look at people for what they're proud of. That's it. So, like, we gotta get over this idea that, like, you do this and then you do this and now there's more to do and what else are you contributing and what did you achieve? Just, man, do you. And I feel like that it'll find a way to make its imprint and impact in this world if you believe in it, right? Like, you found a way to coach. And I think that you're I'm sure you're impacting young people's lives in ways that you probably don't recognize, right? And I'm trying to impact people in ways that I probably don't recognize. And I think like that's enough, right? Like, I don't also have to go and like be some incredible swimmer or like learn calligraphy or something. Like, I don't have to, right? I can, right? I could do that and that'd be dope. But like, maybe just not. Like, maybe, like, I'll just do what makes me happy, stay in my lane, feed my family, you know, do my thing, you know, and then, like, in a couple years, we can look at this again and see if I'm having, like, another, you know, maybe you and I connect again in 5 years and see if this worked out or if I'm having another midlife crisis. I don't know.
I think that's a good place to end it. I appreciate all the time you've given me, and we'll definitely have to connect in person again soon before CIM.
Yeah, dog. I think so, man. I'd love to, man. Well, thank you, man. Thanks for talking to me. And respect to you, man. Like, thank you. Like, thank you for kind of like pushing these conversations and like thinking about running this way. It's actually like I know we got to talk a lot in California, but like kind of chatting with you today has been it's actually been very important to me. I think let's try to have these conversations, man. Me and you, and then like me with others and you with others, you know, and like let's talk about things that aren't always like, how do I recover? How do I get faster? How do I, right? Like, I think there's like bigger things, and I dig what you're trying to do here. I really do, man. So anyway, yeah, man, respect to you. Thanks for chatting with me, man. I hope you got some value out of this. I did.
That's awesome. That's the best compliment I can get. So, again, thank you for your time, and I hope you have a good rest of your night.
All right. Later, Mike.
All right. Have a good one.
See you out there.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to join me, Nile. I should also say belated happy birthday. Good luck with the upcoming training season. Don't be afraid to DM me a great guest suggestion as well. I'll talk to you soon.